This episode is brought to you by Iams Pet Food. When you choose Iams dry dog or cat food, you can see a difference in your pet with your own eyes. Healthy energy in 5 days, healthy digestion in 10 days, and healthy skin and coat in just 25 days. Satisfaction for you and them. Guaranteed or your money back. Feed Iams dry dog or cat food and see a visible difference. Visit Iams.com/difference to learn more.
Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts watched the Giants and thought, I could guard neighbors. I do it all the time.
Oh,
I just target them.
Wow.
That's Lenny.
Yeah, I'll be honest. You've been cooking lately. This has been pretty good intros.
You know, new players, new names, new pun opportunities. Not a new voice there. That is Ben Solak. Frequent collaborator, friend of the show, fellow watcher of preseason football, who is joining me on this journey to talk about that preseason. Well, we got a lot of NFL news stemming from the preseason football, mm-hmm. and we are here to talk about that, Ben.
Yeah, I missed a lot of the preseason live because I was doing family stuff this weekend, and so I was like, man, gotta catch this film on Monday morning. And then while I was watching in the coffee shop, I was a little bit like, I hope nobody's seeing my screen. It'd be a little embarrassing.
Just watching you grinding Bo Nix. Speaking of Bo Nix, we're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about some of the quarterback decisions that have been made, some of the ones that are looming, some other things too. I didn't get to talk about like the Matt Judon, Justin mm-hmm. Simmons signing, some big signings have happened around the NFL. So the premise of today's show is I'm going to pose a question and ask which of these two scenarios is most likely to happen, and then force you to answer. I'll have to answer too, but it's our way of talking about some of these things. Basically, which of these things is more likely? Are you ready for my first question?
Hit me. What do you got?
Which of these scenarios is more likely? Gardner Minshew, recently anointed as the starting quarterback of your Las Vegas Raiders by head coach Antonio Pierce, which is more likely? He starts 7 games or 17?
I feel like anointing is too strong of a verb for what happened with Gardner Minshew as QB1 of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah. Now,
Gardner Minshew woefully appointed. Gardner Minshew resigningly acknowledged as QB1 of the Las Vegas Raiders. I'll put it this way. I think like P17, probability he starts 17 games, I would put it at total zero. Like I would be absolutely astonished if Minshew plays well enough in that job to hold it for the entire season. And even in some worlds in which he plays very, very well, just because the Raiders are like a young team, not viewed as a contending team, and have a young coaching staff, need to figure some stuff out. Even if Minshew is not the problem, a 3-6 Raiders team is just putting Aiden O'Connell out there to see. Like that is going to happen in my estimation. And so to me, I think the likelihood he plays 17 games is pretty much zero. I think he'll play more than seven, but there's at least a chance at seven, he gets injured, O'Connell wins the job, whatever. 17 would be flabbergasting to me. So I think it's seven.
To go back to the begrudging announcement or however you called it, I thought we played it on NFL Live and it was a good hour because I didn't actually see Antonio Pierce talking about it. And
I also saw the tweets before I saw the announcement. I was like, woof.
It's like I'm very new to parenting, but it's like when I try to like pronounce something but lack any conviction in doing so or authority. And I'm just like, don't do that. That's exactly the tone that he took. And he made a point to clarify that it's not because of last night. We know, Antonio. We know. We watched. I think that's what was so tough about this is the last game, Gardner Minshew, I thought played really poorly, frankly, in week two. I thought he played really well in week one, too. But that's the Gardner Minshew experience, baby. Like that's who he is as a quarterback. Like he has games where he makes explosive plays and is consistent and takes care of the football. And then it'll be immediately followed by a play where it's like the previous game didn't even happen. And that's what's literally happened in the preseason. I thought in their last game, he was inaccurate, indecisive. He missed open receivers. Poor Jacoby Myers, by the way, he's just going to be open for this entire season. It's just the ball's not coming his way. He made one beautiful throw to Trey Tucker, who's a player I kind of sneakily really like. Mm-hmm. And then Aiden O'Connell came in, and he was not great either. And then he had I thought he was kind of fine. Then he had the pick six, and I feel like that pick six probably sealed his fate. It feels like to me this is the coaching staff, Luke Getsy, the offensive coordinator, but ultimately Pierce, just riding with the veteran and hope that you know, you get a little bit of juice with some of those explosive plays. And then, you know, over the course of his career, Gardner Minshew has not turned the ball over a lot. I think they're just betting on this defense being an elite unit, which I'm very high on the Raiders defense. So I get that line of thinking.
Yeah. I think the reality is that neither Gardner Minshew nor Aiden O'Connell is good enough nor bad enough that like preseason was going to change anything for you, right? It's not like O'Connell was this like, you know, toolsy project who maybe took a big second year leap in processing. Like that's not his descriptor at all. And Minshew's whole thing is being like unoffensively average. And so if you were walking into the preseason hoping one of these two guys was going to do something, again, either peak good or peak bad, to convince you to go one direction, like that to me was just was never going to occur. So you follow the money, right? They gave Gardner Minshew good money early in free agency too, right? They got there right away. And so that's where more of your investment has been placed. That's where you're going to start this quarterback carousel. And then, like I said, I think we'll see O'Connell at some point. What interests me, like you talk about the defense, it'd be really nice if Antonio Pierce, running back background, it'd be nice if they could have a good running back to them, a good running game to them. Zamir White and Alexander Mattison right now are split in time. Like they have not yet decided on who running back one is yet. And I would not say the Zamir White Alexander Mattison battle is any more exciting than the Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell battle. And so I'm very interested to see who wins that running job, that running back job as well, because this team's going to need to be able to run the football to be successful.
They're going to need to run the football to be successful. They're going to have, I think, those two tight ends on the field a great deal. Neither of whom I would say are amongst the best blocking tight end. Well, certainly Brock Bowers is a rookie. Mike Myers in his second year, I always thought Michael Mayer was actually a little bit like underrated as a route runner receiver, maybe overrated as a blocker. He's fine. And I think, you know, having those tight ends on the field, you can see an identity, right? With your two receivers being Adams and Myers and maybe throwing in some Trey Tucker. Like that I guess, I know I'm a bit of a broken record here, but like what bothers me so much is I actually like that group of skill players. And I think you could do some really cool and fun things with them. But it's going to be hard to get the consistent quarterback play you need. It's a great situation for Dak Prescott to walk into next year. That, by the way, the entire subtext of like 80% of today's podcast is going to be a great situation for Dak Prescott next year.
I will say they are definitionally doing cool things with Brock Bowers. Like he's lining up at like 19 different places. It's just backfield, cool things don't always mean slot, production if the rest of the offense can't handle it. So
So look, this is Raiders fans. If you're listening to this and you're disgruntled, you know, take it out on your organization for not adding to the quarterback position this offseason. Yeah. I think it's, you know, a successful season for them and Antonio Pierce, you know, keeping his job and them pushing in December and being feisty, which I actually think is plausible, is that defense playing at a top 10 level and the offense protecting the football. I think what's going to be interesting is, can Gardner Minshew actually do that? Or will there be a game where he like throws a bunch of interceptions and that's when they decide to make the switch? But to actually answer my own question, I tend to agree with you that I think it'll be, I chose seven for a reason because I wanted to kind of take it a little bit too low because I do think he'll play more than seven. I don't think he'll play 17. I think the interesting thing is just going to be when it happens and, you know, whether or not we can see a little bit more out of O'Connell. And, by the way, to also say what I think, I would have just gone with O'Connell because, you know, not that I think he has covered himself in glory this preseason, and I talked a little bit about him when I did the AFC West. There is hypothetical upside there. My feeling was he is a pocket passer with a decent arm, but not like amazing. And maybe year two, he would play a little bit faster. And I think that type of quarterback, the offense we talked about with the skill players, it can actually be somewhat efficient. He will try to push the ball downfield, but we're not going to see that from him until at some point in the season.
Yeah. I also, O'Connell, because of youth, but that's your whole argument, right? It's like, you know, maybe he's something, which again, this is a thin argument.
Okay. Which is more likely? Caleb Williams throws 30 touchdowns or Caleb Williams is sacked 50 times? Numbers chosen to make this question difficult for you.
Yes. Do you know how many rookie quarterbacks have thrown at least 30 passing touchdowns?
Not ever? Many.
One, Justin Herbert, right? We are looking
broke the record.
Yes, we are looking for not just like a Justin Herbert caliber rookie performance if we're going for 30 passing touchdowns. We're also looking for longevity, right? Herbert played 15.75 because he kind of got the weird week 2 start. He played a lot of games. He was able to stay on the field the whole time. And then he was getting trust down in the red zone. He was getting opportunity to throw those touchdowns because of like the very elite processing levels that he put out there as a rookie. Caleb, like even if Caleb's out there and playing well, which I anticipate, I think Caleb was like an excellent, excellent prospect. Would not surprise me to see the Bears, who first free agent signing of the entire cycle, DeAndre Swift, running back, who are putting two tight ends, three tight ends out on the field right now in the preseason at a higher rate than any other offense in the league. Would not surprise me if, even if Caleb is good and he's playing all those games, the Bears are running the football a lot in the red zone. And so 30 passing touchdowns is a towering and terrifying and difficult number to achieve. Do you know how many rookie quarterbacks have gotten sacked 50 times?
A few.
Yes, substantially about 3. But rookie quarterbacks get sacked a
low
lot
numbers,
more.
Both low numbers. Yes. That's why I
It was David Carr, Bryce Young, and Blake Bortles were the 3 that got it done. Kyler Murray was there at 48, Josh Rosen at 45. Zach Wilson and Geno Smith also 40 in the 40s. I think that number is a lot more easily achieved as passing attempts go up. Obviously, as passing attempts go up, we expect passing touchdowns to go up. But again, I think that the Bears are going to be a pretty high run rate team when we get down to the low red. I do think that Caleb, who's done a really nice job avoiding sacks so far in this preseason.
This is why I want to talk about this.
Is maybe not necessarily going to have as good of a time doing so in the regular season. So I think like in a positive way, in a positive spin for Bears fans, he's going to play lots of games. He's going to get the drop back a lot. And he's going to make a lot of spectacular plays. But one of the costs is going to be taking a lot of sacks. I think 50 sacks is a lot more likely than 30 passing touchdowns.
Yeah. The other thing I'll add to your point about the Bears leaning on the run is I think Caleb himself is going to run in a fair amount of touchdowns, which is something we have seen him do. And we just saw him. It was actually quite great. And you saw, by the way, that like when he scrambles, and I think you've seen this now in both games, we talked about it last week when he took off, when he saw defensive look, cover 2 man, and he took off. You saw, again, in this game, in the red zone, it was in the low red zone, I believe, like he was keeping his eyes downfield. He had an intention to throw it, and then I felt like his sense of timing of when to take off, this is something I really liked about his game in college. Like, he is not scrambling to scramble. He breaks pockets sometimes unnecessarily, or he did that certainly in college. But as far as, like, actually, he breaks pockets unnecessarily, but then he's still trying to make a play with his arm. And I think you've seen that, like, when he ran in for the touchdown, you saw he did want to keep play alive with his arm, ultimately lean on his legs. His legs are good. He is a good scrambler. He is a plus runner. He is not, you know, one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in the NFL by any means. What I'm going to find interesting, Ben, is something you alluded to, and this is what I really want to talk to you about, which is it kind of cuts to him taking sacks. Thus far, through 2 games, and he played quite a bit in week 2, he has mostly avoided sacks. He took one, was also in the red zone on a different drive. And he, after the game, said, "I held on to the football too long." But you've seen a lot of that Caleb Williams magic where he's just dodging pass rushers and turning the corner. And I guess my question is, do we think that is sustainable against starting, you know, defensive linemen and linebackers? Or is he going to F around and find out sooner rather than later once the regular season starts?
Yeah, I think what's really important to understand is that in the preseason, you never go broke taking a profit, right? And that very much informs how quarterbacks play, right? And so it is much easier in the preseason to get to the check down and throw it nice and early in the down on 3rd and 7 and then have the back get tackled 4 yards downfield and it's 4th and 3 and jog to the sideline. And the OC says, "Good job getting through the reads. No take plays. Excellent." It's preseason football. Nobody really cares what the scoreboard says at the end. We get to week 1 at 3rd and 7 into 4th and 3 is punt. And that is a lot more meaningful when the bullets are live, when we are putting wins and losses on the scoreboard afterward. So I think you're going to see Caleb, Jaden, Drake, Bo, any young quarterback you want. I think you're going to see a lot of these guys just start to take more negative plays in pursuit of finding some peak positive plays once we get to real football, once we get to regular season football. Now, Caleb at USC, right, by my charting, by PFF's charting, he was a pretty good pressure to sack guy, right? This is one of the stats that we find to be fairly sticky from college to the pros. He was above
elite,
that.
But good.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And he was like above like the average rate. Like, he was taking a little bit more pressures than you, or excuse me, a little bit more sacks than you'd expect, but he's paying it off tremendously with positive plays. So the juice is worth the squeeze. Compare this to a player like Jaden Daniels, who paying you off a lot of positive plays, taking a ton of sacks, a perilously high number, and that's where you start to get concerned. So I think he's going to be fine in this regard. He's going to be a rookie. He's going to make his mistakes. He's going to bail off the back of the pocket, get 14 yards behind the line of scrimmage, think that he can outrun a linebacker. He can't outrun a linebacker and take bad sacks. It's going to happen. Overall, I expect it to be rosy. Is it going to be like the 4% sack rate that he's had through the first two games? Absolutely not. I'd be stunned.
It's been so funny. We're going to get to Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels later in the show, but it's just been so funny through the first 2 weeks of the season watching these rookie quarterbacks, how much they look just exactly like they did in college, for better or worse. Mm-hmm. And I think the way you put it now, it's funny because I've been watching them all, particularly I think about Caleb and Jaden and Bo. And I think, man, you guys look like I see all this exact, you're doing all the same stuff you did in the college mm-hmm. level. But it's like, of course that's true in the preseason because none of them are really, and I say that as someone who's like, I gasped watching some of those Caleb Williams plays this weekend. Hand up, mm-hmm. like the touchdown to, or no, it should have been a touchdown to Adunze.
Yeah.
Where it was very Josh Allen-esque where he's throwing the ball, right? Falling mm-hmm. to his right out of bounds. I feel like Josh Allen's made like more of those plays than anyone.
Rome Adunze was so mad because the end line of the goal line wasn't painted. It wasn't a big, bright white line. It was just like a tiny white line. And he didn't realize it was. So he caught it, stuck his toes down. He was like, I'm the man. And then he realized the paint job was different than he's used to and he was out of bounds. He was very frustrated.
It was incredible. Mm-hmm. Like that was, you know, obviously the throw rolling to his left as well, you know. However, you know, when we came into this preseason, I said, I've done like, I don't know, approximately 500 segments on what do you want to see out of Caleb Williams in the preseason? And every single one of them, I've said, I want to see him play faster. I want to see him get the ball out in time. I want to see, you know, that because he's going to have to do all those things in the NFL. And he really hasn't done any of that. And it has not mattered because it is preseason. And also because he does all the other amazing things, but it will start to matter week one. And I think he's totally capable of doing those things. And when you hear him talk about it, it's obvious he wants to. And I think you saw him kind of try to a little bit earlier in this one. But it is just something we have not seen yet, Ben. Like he is still doing the Caleb Williams show.
Yeah. And one of the things that makes projection for Caleb Williams moving forward very rosy and very exciting is the fact that, like, if you compare him to like a Trevor Lawrence, right? Let's use another first overall pick that came out with a ton of hype. This is Lisan Al-Ghayib. This is the dude. We've been talking about him for 16 months. Trevor was very good in structure, right? And the anticipation was he'd be excellent from the pocket. And one of the things that he was going to have to learn is that NFL windows move a little bit faster and close a little bit faster. And it's not going to be as easy from the pocket. And obviously Trevor's first year was like waste because of Urban Meyer anyway. Like, it's very hard to read anything into that. But even like through his second year, first year with Doug Peterson, you saw a guy calibrating to NFL windows, NFL pocket, NFL timing. That in structure work in the NFL can be really dramatically different from the college level, especially when the offenses are so different. The out of structure stuff, if you're a very plus athlete, right? Which, like, there are some guys, I think Bo Nix is a good example, who like did a lot of out of structure stuff in college. You're going to try to do that in the pros and discover, okay, athletically, I'm not what I used to be. But if you're a very clearly plus athlete, which Caleb Williams is, he's strong as a runner, he's quick as a runner, he's an unbelievable arm off platform, unbelievable arm on the move. A lot of the out of structure stuff can translate because, like, it's less about windows and timing and space and closing and more about, okay, are you physically capable of doing this? Like, do you have this in your bag? And so when Caleb makes a play like he did, the Cole Kmet play in week one, even the Rome Adunze throw there in week two, the DeAndre Swift little out of structure, you know, chest pass into the screen, you're just like, all right, like, listen, young man's got it. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to teach it. I don't know how you find it, but he's got it. And that's going to be such a floor raiser. Whenever we talk about these mobile quarterbacks, these creative quarterbacks, we always talk about ceiling. Oh, second reaction plays, oh, they create explosives on the field. It's about floor. It's about avoiding sacks. It's about turning throwaways into positive gains. Like that, he's got all of that. And that out of structure stuff is going to buoy him for a long time as he learns more of the in structure stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he's really, really difficult to bring down, mm-hmm. but I forgot who they have week one. They got Houston, right? No,
they had Buffalo week one, and then they had Cincinnati week two. Or wait, you're talking about in the regular season.
Regular season. Probably,
yeah, Lord, I have no idea.
I'm just saying, you know, it's an entirely other thing when, I don't know, Roquan Smith is chasing you down in the open field versus some of the guys he's been.
Tennessee, he's going to have Kenneth Murray chasing down. Ken's pretty fast. All right, that's concerning.
I think you'll be okay with that one. I'm very, very excited about Caleb Williams. A little bit less excited about the next scenario, which is a cursed question. This, and there's many ways to look at this. There's the way of what will they do, what I would do. We want to talk about both of those things here. Mm-hmm. The Steelers, which is more likely, the Steelers week one starter is Russell Wilson or Justin Fields.
It's more likely it's Russell Wilson because this is Mike Tomlin we're talking about. It can't be easy. It can't be painless. And if he said something in March that he was going to do it in September, he's going to do it in September. He's going to keep his word. I think Justin Fields could like move mountains with his mind. And I think Russell Wilson would be the starter in week one because that's what Tomlin said. And Tomlin always loves to just be like, you know, this is how we run it. This is the way we do it. He started to give a little bit. He has.
I was like, just about to say, I actually disagree with that, where I think I'm a student of Tomlinese, and I've been like watching everything he said about this. And like, I felt like he was giving a little bit, and you know, which people are plugged in with him and the way they've talked about it has shifted a little bit. But you talk about Justin Fields moving mountains. Whatever the opposite of moving a mountain is done. However, his competition is, it was so bad, dude. Yeah.
It's very important because like this has not been talked about adequately because of the nature of Russell Wilson's contract in Denver and what happened with like, you know, the defense in the locker room in his first year there and then the Sean Payton thing in year two. Like there's been so much around Russell Wilson and ancillary to his play on the field that like it doesn't get said clearly enough, often enough. Russ was very bad at playing quarterback in Denver every single game for two straight seasons. Absolutely. There were games we were like, oh, like this could work. And that's the case with like Davis Mills and Taylor Heineken. It's the case with every NFL quarterback. They can all like do a couple of things consistently against NFL caliber defenses, but you know, behind the sticks, you know, close game in the fourth quarter, bad field position, even games when they were leading. Russ consistently put the Broncos in positions where they were going to lose games because of his play. Nate Hackett, Sean Payton, Cortland Sutton, Jaleel McLaughlin, I don't give a hoot. Russ did not play quarterback well in Denver, period. And so when he goes to Pittsburgh and there's a lot of like, oh, you know, leadership. Oh, Mike Tomlin's going to get his mind right. And like, oh, the locker room, the culture will be a lot better. Like, that's all well and good. Great, congratulations. He's playing like he's 24 years old. He does not have the athleticism to do that anymore. He absolutely, unequivocally must change his play style dramatically, right? Russ's play style, moonshots and scrambling around, was so predicated on athleticism. He has to change his style. More so like late Drew Brees, like late Peyton Manning. Okay, tectonic shift in how he thinks about the game. He refuses to do it. And so I refuse to be surprised by the Russell Wilson preseason performance because he wasn't good in Denver.
I will say, I didn't think he was good in Denver, but he looks worse. I'll just say that. I mean, again, we're just seeing he's coming off of an injury, playing in, it was not a good, the whole situation was bad offensively with Pittsburgh, and the offensive line played poorly as well. Which, by the way, like taking Russell Wilson and putting him behind any sort of issues with pass protection at this point in his career is just like pouring gasoline on a fire. Like it's over. There's no chance, right? You got nothing because of how long he holds on to the football. But watching him, Ben, like I was struck by like, you know, the usual issues are there in terms of like not seeing the middle of the field well, holding onto the football, all of that. But I watched him like in this game turn down a couple of throws that I just have not seen Russell Wilson turn down, even in Denver to a little bit of lesser degree, certainly not earlier in his career. I mean, there were just a couple of ball situationally where he was, you know, on third down, checking it down. They dialed up a shot play for him at one point, and instead of waiting for Pat Freiermuth, it was first and 10. It was a shot play off a play action, Pat Freiermuth to get open, and he got incredibly open. And I've seen Russell Wilson hit that out like a million times. He was like, nah, it's cool. I see these DBs converging on George Pickens. I'm just going to check it down. And I was watching that and thinking, man, both of these offenses are going to be boom and bust, both of these quarterbacks, but you're getting so little boom with one of them at this point, it's not worth it. And I say that as someone who thinks Justin Fields played really bad in this game and had a couple cool plays. He still runs amazingly. I'm not saying he's incapable of, I've seen Justin Fields play better than that as well more recently. But I just think you're capturing so little upside at this point with Russell Wilson. It's just not worth it to put him in quarterback.
He's very indecisive right now. And this, I think this, you started to see this late in his Denver career. I remember watching the game against the Lions that he played late in Detroit in that season, just being like, oh, like he just sees it and pats it and doesn't know if he has it and he hitches. And by the time he's done with that, it's closed.
Arm strength? Yeah. Like, is it, I really think he's like, I can't make, like there was a deep ball where he had.
I think it was Van. I know the one you're talking, oh, Calvin Austin.
Austin running like the post. And he won his route. And I'm thinking, throw the ball. Instead, but it was weird. He attempted, I mean, that's the middle of the field, but he, I don't understand his decisions right now. Like why, when he is deciding to throw the football, the passes he is passing up, because you looked at the, you know, I saw like people like, this is a disgusting offense. Nothing's going right. The offensive line. Yeah. But there were moments where guys were open and he did not throw it to them. And I feel bad because I feel like I'm talking up with both sides of my mouth a little bit because I saw Justin Fields do the same things. I want to emphasize that. This is not Justin Fields' exoneration here, but at least that dude can run the football.
Yeah.
And you got a few out of structure plays, you know?
And when you talk, when people talk about like, oh, the offense like is bad, right? Like, cause this happened for all of his years at Denver. This was happening at the end of his career with Seattle. It's like, oh, well, the offense isn't good for him. There isn't anything Russ is doing at this stage in his career that's hang your hat on stuff. If he was consistently delivering the ball to checkdowns on time, like early in the down, we're going to talk about Bo Nix in a second. Bo Nix gets the ball to checkdown.
I knew you were going
to
say that.
Oh, we're going to talk about Bo Nix.
Part of the reason why Broncos fans are loving this is because they have had to live with the absence of it now.
Exactly. So you can build an offense out of consistently getting the ball underneath. It's quick game offense. Is it the most amazing offense? No, you can't. No, but you can build around that. If you have a guy who like can hit a shot play, right? Like, okay, like he's not consistently accurate and he holds the ball for too long. But when it is downfield, he can hit that. When Jameis Winston theory, like you can build something out of that. It's not great. It's not perfect, but you can. If you have a quarterback like Justin Fields, who's 240 running a 4.4, you can still, when we say build an offense, what we really mean is modulate what the defense does. I can walk the line of scrimmage and predict what's going to happen in terms of scheme and in terms of
we have a personnel. Strength. Like,
yeah, because they have to react to something.
That we know we are good at as a football team. We are going to lean into this one thing.
Russell Wilson does not dictate a single thing. Deep ball, quick ball, in structure passing, out of structure passing, tucking and running. He does not dictate a single thing defense. So defensively, you can line up however you want. You can focus on, okay, we are just taking away George Pickens today. Okay, we are plus one in the box. We're stopping Najee and Jaylen Warren. Because Russ puts no stressors on you, which you cannot, like, at the quarterback position, that is unacceptable. It is untenable. And so that's why, Fields at the very least presents a stressor that you can then, okay, on Monday and Tuesday, start to game plan off of that stressor.
I feel stressed now myself.
I got fired up about Russ on a Monday afternoon.
It's tough, man. It's tough. And it's tough because I loved watching this guy play football. He was so good. I mean, God. The decline has been pretty rough there. Okay. Let's take a quick break. I feel like the vibe of this podcast has been like negative. I'm going to choose the most positive topic to come out of
it. It's preseason week two. We should be only believing in goodness. And here we are, just Debbie Downering.
Caleb. All right, break. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and over, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, DC, Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans, Massachusetts. If you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Does this sound familiar? You're a maintenance specialist and you've been squaring off with a leaky radiator at your facility for hours. You're both drenched in sweat. You've thrown the whole playbook at it, but so far, it's got an answer for everything. What you need is a teammate, a pro who has seen it all before, and that's Grainger. With support specialists always ready to chat, the product you need, plus a million more, just give this ringer a ring. call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or stop by one of their local branches. What does it feel like to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with AT&T Next Up Anytime? It's like when you first pick up those tongs and now you're the one running the grill. It's indescribable, like something you've never felt before. All the mouth-watering anticipation of new possibilities, whether that's making a perfect cheeseburger or treating your family to a grilled baked potato, which you know will forever change the way they look at potatoes. With AT&T Next Up Anytime, you can feel this way again and again. Learn how to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence on us and the latest iPhone every year with AT&T Next Up Anytime. AT&T, connecting changes everything. Apple Intelligence coming fall 2024 with Siri and device language set to U.S. English. Some features and languages will be coming over the next year. $0 offer may not be available on future iPhones. Next Up Anytime feature may be discontinued at any time, subject to change. Additional fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See att.com/iPhone for details. I'm going to do the Giants Commanders here. Which is more, I know, I was like, I'm going to be more positive. So let's talk about two teams that people are very low on. I have a sort of positive angle on this. Which is more likely, the Giants or the Commanders finish with a winning record? This is sort of a way of getting into Daniel Jones and Jaden Daniels, but obviously there's a lot more to it than that. Which is your answer?
I think it's the Commanders.
I'm leaning Commanders.
Yeah, I don't love how I feel about it either way. So Jaden Daniels, who is a prospect that you were much higher on than I remember texting about him in March, and you were like, I'm there. And I was like, I am not there, right? Like, you were much more in his camp than I was. At the very least, Jaden is an offense unto himself, right? Because when you have a quarterback who can consistently deliver the deep ball, like we were talking about earlier, right? And then also has the mobility that he has, right? He has truly like game-breaking speed, turning a 5-yard scramble into a 15-yard game caliber of acceleration. He is an offense unto himself, right? And that's a very important thing to have at quarterback when your offensive coordinator is Cliff Kingsbury, because Cliff is a lot of simple stuff. And like, I know it's preseason, so obviously it's all the simple stuff.
No, let's get into it. I want to get into this because we are now two weeks into the who's Cliff Kingsbury in 2024 experience, and
it's the same John. It's the same stuff.
Put him in the gun, spreading it out, static receivers.
Terry McLaurin has taken all but one snap at left outside wide receiver. Ian Harditz of PFF threw that out today. Yeah, it's like, all right.
McLaurin looks awesome, though.
Does it look like prime D-hop?
No. This is a really interesting performance. Not interesting, but I feel like this was a really, this last week, Jaden Daniels played a couple of drives. He played only one drive first week, and it was very clear they went into this game like, we wanted to do this. Okay, great. Last week, you audibled to a go ball. This week, it's all quick game, RPOs, quick hitting play action. That was an interesting. We are going to bring your time to throw to levels never seen in the NFL. Air yards per attempt, sub 5. Let's just, you know, and I want to say a couple things. One, Jaden Daniels can do that. Like, he he throws the ball quickly. It is accurate. He is a good RPO quarterback. We saw that at LSU. He makes good decisions. He knows how to read defenses. And I know we're kind of roasting Cliff. I had a feeling coming into the season that they would have to do a lot of that because of the offensive line, and this would be their way of mitigating some of the issues that they're going to have in pass protection. I think they're going to run the ball a fair amount too. That said, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, here's like a, this is a thing you can do. This is a thing your quarterback is good at. You have good playmakers, by the way, which is very important for that. Like, you get the ball to Terry McLaurin in spin. I guess Diami Brown is another wide receiver too.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, they have good playmaker. This is really important. Yeah. I'm worried about that.
I don't know. I kind of like that tight end who caught the aforementioned quick hitter off layoff and John Bates. But you don't want to build the whole ship out of that, which is, it was one game, it's preseason, whatever. I guess, so I... Early returns, I'm like concerned about the Cliff of it all, but you know, as far as Jaden goes, he's done everything they've asked of him. I think there's just questions about like, okay, well, what else are they going to do? And also, like, to our discussion earlier about college quarterbacks, like, he looks like he did in college, but again, he hasn't been pressed or asked to do more.
And that's why I think like the offense unto himself and really like also like the explosive play unto himself is very important, because if you're going to live in quick game, RPO game, they run a lot of constraint plays. We talk about like, okay, inside zone with a bubble screen and like, you know, a tunnel screen to the right side with a smoke screen to the left side. Like a lot of just like, okay, count the players and wherever the defensive players aren't, we're going to throw it to that side. They run a lot of that stuff, which great if you have dudes who can break tackles more consistently, like from the slot, from the outside. Terry was a great receiver, like can break a tackle, not really exactly where his bread is buttered. And then John Dotson, you'd hope would be that guy from the slot. They seem really out on Dotson. Diami, again, is like a vertical guy, not really a tackle breaker. And so you're not getting the explosive plays from that quick game, that RPO game that you'd like to. But the fact that Jaden can at any time be like, oh, one-on-one, I can drop this in a bucket. Yeah. And, oh, man coverage, I can go run for 20 yards. That's going to let this offense get some more firecracker to it that it really, really, really needs. Even when it's in like quick dropbacks and bad tackle situations, like it can still create explosives that way. It's very important.
You talked earlier about, you know, the Steelers and their inability to also just like affect defenses in any way. I think you're already seeing the impact of Jaden's legs on defenses, the way they played the run in this game, some of the RPOs, the way they were reacting to him. He did have one designed run and he was funny about it afterwards. He apologized to Dan Quinn for not sliding. It wasn't like a comical hit or anything. But it's very obvious that they're going to be very intentional about trying to limit that, which is also good, by the way. It's obviously something you wanted to see him working on in the NFL. I like him. I like watching him. I like the way he throws the ball. I think it looks good. I think he's a great athlete. I think that I still have a lot of concerns about this offense, but I like what I see about him, from him enough. And I think he is the type of quarterback who will give them the ability to beat bad defenses, I guess is the way I would put it, which that sounds like damning with faint praise. That's not really about him. I'm not damning him with faint praise. I'm talking about like the structure of the offense, the offensive line, play caller who I don't love, but he is the kind of quarterback, because he can do all the things we've been talking about, they will be able to beat defenses that don't have, you know, above average linebackers, for example. Whereas New York, which was the other side of this question,
whoever's not watching this podcast needs to safely park their car on the side of the highway, pull up YouTube and watch Mina's face when she transitioned to the Giants.
Daniel Jones. The funny thing about his horrible, so for those who missed the preseason game, he threw 2 picks. It should have been 3. One was honestly one of the most comical picks I've seen.
The first play that should have been a pick was like, oh no, this is our table setter. This is our first rep of the preseason. Oh, gracious.
The second, the one, it was Derek Barnett who kind of was hanging on to him and he just kind of threw it. That was like some Keystone Cops. The third one, or the second one, was an incredible play by Stingley, who, did we talk about him as a potential DPOI dark horse? I saw that take.
No, because corners don't win it. Yeah, but Derek Stingley, listen, I never came close to selling Derek Stingley's stock. And then like first day of camp, he was like fighting Dalton Schultz. And I was like, oh, he's in for all pro season. He's keyed up, ready to go.
I had the Texans defense in my top 10, but they should have been higher. Like I'm just buying everything that they're selling right now. But then it was funny because he came back, he played a bit more and he actually played okay against backups. But and Neighbors obviously looks like he has some juice early on, but I just don't feel like they've got enough dudes out there on offense. And I'm with the offensive line to compensate for what continue to be issues with Daniel Jones and ball security and decision-making and all of it.
Yeah. It's looking, if my training camp report updating is correct, it's looking like the right side of the line is going to be Greg Van Roten and Jermaine Illuminor, which is just it's such a bad spot from a pass protection perspective. It's funny because like individually, I think Darius Slayton is like a handy guy to have on a roster. And I think Wandell Robinson is a handy guy to have on a roster. And I think that Malik Nabers is a handy guy to have on a roster. When all three of those guys are on the field and like Jalen Hyatt's wide receiver 4, just the skill sets are so redundant and you're watching going, okay, like you want to do two things when you have those receivers. First, you want to get isolation shots to the outside, and they did that, right? And you have Malik Nabers on a deep stop route. Like, that's great. And you have Darius Slayton on a deep go route. Daniel Jones hits him 44 yards, first and goal from the one. Like, Daniel Jones has always had, like, a weirdly good deep ball connection with Darius Slayton. It's like, okay, we can a little bit get something going here. But the second thing you want to have happen is to be able to run designer stuff and quick game stuff and underneath stuff and go yards after the catch. And, like, Jones is just so slow on like, preseason defensive to, like, first reads underneath. And you're just like okay, like, I know Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka are, like, spiking the headsets. Because, like, we have to be able to do layup line stuff if we're going to make this style of an offense work. Now, 2 years ago, Daniel Jones was still kind of bad at the layup line stuff, but he did enough down the field and he did enough running the football that, like, it became...
Down the field.
Every so often, he would hit, like, a 50-yard post. Like, Darius Slayton,
like, gets six times in the course of an NFL season. No, we're not doing Daniel Jones push the ball. Daniel Jones, I feel like his deep ball stats were all, like, it's like the classic, the Jimmy Garoppolo honorary, like, your deep ball stats look good because you throw the ball downfield like 10 times.
Yes, that was the year where he threw it downfield less. He was, like, all underneath stuff. But again, there's nothing more perplexing than a perfect Daniel Jones 9 ball
nine normal reps. While I was saying that, I think Ben Solak was pulling up the numbers to try to confirm that Daniel Jones did
throw. I Twitter searched Daniel Jones 20 plus really quickly to see if I could find stats. I can't get it to true media that quickly.
They don't exist. But he actually, like, in the few occasions when he did push the ball downfield, it actually sometimes looked fine. And that's, it was like Jimmy Garoppolo a few years ago with San Francisco, where he very barely did it, but when he did, it was it looked fine. I the case, by the way, for the Giants is really the defense, which I actually think is going to be kind of fun and feisty, particularly, of course, that defensive front, the front seven, I think is pretty good, and will keep them, they can win some ugly games because of that, which is what makes, I'm pretty sure, I don't have it in front of me, but I think last I checked, the Commanders and Giants have identical win odds.
Yeah.
Which feels right. Whereas on the Commanders defense, it's very, like, patchwork. It's an interesting mix of, like, vets and, you know, guys that Dan Quinn knows, and then an incredibly fearsome defensive tackle duo. So it's hard to predict, but at this point, I'm going with Daniels because, as you said, he's sort of an offense in and of himself.
Yeah.
And I think there will be games where he takes over the football game. There will be games where it doesn't look good for a litany of reasons, in my opinion, but I'm excited about him.
Yeah, I definitely think the best unit of the four that we're talking about is the Giants defense, like, without question. Yeah. But in order for you to be such a good defense that I think you can yank your team to a winning record, despite what might be like a bottom of the league quarterback play, you have to be like Jets Browns level, right? You have to be like so dominant, insane pass rush. I can beat the elite quarterbacks. Like this. And the Giants, I think, are going to be good. I don't think they're going to be that level.
At 5 Hour Energy, they stan the fan. From the new to football fans to the born for the love of the game lifers, they know fandom isn't just a hobby. It's a way of life. We're talking about the fans who are born to fan. In fact, 79% of professional football fans have been fans of their favorite team since they were born. Enter the superfans, the unofficial captains of the fan base, known for outlandish antics, hearts of gold, and passion on top of passion. They're leading the charge for their teams and for their cities. It's about their deep love for the community. It's about pride in their colors. It's about rooting for their team, no matter what. No matter what team you root for, 5 Hour Energy knows being a fan requires heart, soul, and a whole lot of energy. That's why they've created a limited edition Stan the Fan 5 Hour Energy to keep you fueled throughout the season. Available on 5hourenergy.com, shipped nationwide. That's the number 5hourenergy.com. This holiday season, don't forget your number one fan, you. So what's a gift you could use? Maybe go to more home games or even travel to some away games while rocking a new away team jersey. Well, we've got something for you. Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. With Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. That'll help with that swanky away jersey. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, speaking of defense, which is more likely? The Falcons field an above or below average defense? So for context, I alluded to this earlier, the Falcons, who are all in, baby, traded for Matt Judon, who notably said he's cool playing without a new contract this year. He's not going to, he's not pulling a Hassan Reddick where he, you know, wants his way out after the trade. And then they did sign Justin Simmons to a 1-year deal. So the defense now looks a little bit different from last time we talked about them. Since then, they lost DeMarco Helms to a significant injury, which sucks. But it's still a very strong safety group, in my opinion, with Bates, Simmons, and Richie Grant. There's a lot of optionality there. Corner, you're looking at A.J. Terrell, Clark Phillips, D. Alford. And then up front now, you got Jared, Onyemata, Aroro, some combination of him and Zach Harrison. But at edge, you have Judon now on one side. And then I guess Ebikadi or Lorenzo Carter, yeah, opposite him, with Caden Ellis at linebacker rushing the passer as well. Above or below average, Raheem Morris takes over. What you thinking?
I'm willing to go above average on this. I think that's happening. I'm willing to do some
optimism.
I'm willing to do some faith, okay, and some belief. I think that the Falcons' lack of pass rush has been pretty solidly covered at this point, right? I mean, this team over the last three seasons combined least amount of sacks in the entire NFL. It was true of them last season. Derek Klassen, The Athletic, loves this stat. It's such a fun one. Last year, the Falcons' two primary sack getters, the two greatest sack getters, were Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree, which is just like a terrifying sentence. And then the second half is both of those guys aren't on the team anymore, right? So it was, we're living off Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree. Oh, and also they're gone, right? And so a very bleak pass rush room for Atlanta. Judon is a weird player, right? Because in the last two healthy seasons that we've seen from him, 2022 and 2021, 15 and a half sacks and 12 and a half sacks altogether. You look at the pressure numbers, they don't necessarily detail a player you would expect to be that productive from a sack basis. Yeah. Now, being able to finish at the quarterback is a legitimate trait, right? And I think that that's something that Judon does very well. He's got great length. He tends to win through offensive tackles, which means he's getting to the point where the quarterback is. He's not getting like blown by the back or like, you know, inside move or whatever. So I do think that he has the ability to be an impact player, even if the pressure rate isn't super high. He's getting a little bit long in the tooth, but whatever. The Falcons defense last year had some bright spots without having a great pass rush. I do think that like, it's not a good group, but I think they can make it work around it not being a good group. The way to do that is to have really nice coverage. And A.J. Terrell gives you that at one corner spot. Jesse Bates was unbelievable for them from the post. And then I think Justin Simmons' late career box move is thrilling. I'm very excited about this. I know people are worried about Simmons in the fall off and athletes at safety. Like, you have to be cognizant of that. I do think the fact that he's playing with the preeminent post defender in Jesse Bates, that allows him to be primarily a box player. He's such a smart guy. He's excellent before the snap. He knows how to bait throws. He's done that really well over his time in Denver. I think that he's going to be a delightful player as he transitions to a little bit smaller of a range of influence on the field. I think he's the big ad. I think that the Falcons have a chance to have a really nice coverage team. Got to figure out quarter two, but a really nice coverage team that accounts for the fact that their pass rush is still a little lacking.
Do you think they'll play a fair amount of dime to get Grant on the field as well? I was thinking about this with Helms. I mean, Grant's kind of an interesting player too, because he's definitely a little bit more duplicative with Simmons than Bates. Obviously, there's very few players, I think, in the NFL who can play like Jesse Bates right now. But he's a guy you want closer to the box as well.
I've always struggled with Richie Grant, the player. I think that the closer you are to the ball, the more consistently I need you to be physical and tackle. And that's just something where Grant, from an athleticism perspective, is built for the box. And from a tackling and playing the ball perspective, is built for playing deep. And so, okay, like maybe in like a quarters team and like a, you know, play, you know, rotating safeties, whatever, he's got some utility. On a team that we expect Jimmy Lake, the DC, to be running, Raheem Morris, obviously, with his defensive background as well. When you have Jesse Bates and Justin Simmons, you expect to play Bates deep middle, right? You're going to play him in the post. Grant at the box, like, I just worry about the tackling. I wouldn't be tripping over myself to get Richie Grant on the field.
I think the question about above or below average is kind of a little tricky too with this one, because you really have to define it. Because of the division that Cujo's scratching at the door, because this is his time to eat. He literally has the best internal clock of
it's and it's my fault too. You have to let him know. It was Ben's fault. Ben ran late for the podcast today because he had technical issues. It's on me.
The Falcons numbers last year are actually kind of hilarious. They without looking, can you guess where the Falcons defense ranked in success rate? Which, but for those, I mention this all the time. I wanted to define it for people. There's EPA per play, and then there's success rate. EPA per play, it is affected dramatically by things like, you know, interceptions and explosive plays and things like touchdowns, whereas success rate is more like on a down-to-down basis. You know, how are you playing offensively or defensively? Success is determined by, like, if you're, you know, down in distance, are you converting? Are you getting closer, et cetera? Okay, yeah. So
Where do you think you're ranked?
Well, this is unfair because I was just doing ranking all 32 coaching staffs from for a piece that's coming out later this week. And so I know that the Falcons, from a coaching their defensive perspective, were unbelievable by a success rate and then like terrible otherwise, right?
Not terrible, but they were third in success rate, which is insane.
Yes.
But 24th in DVOA, which
it's worse than
DLDR. It's called the NFC South. So DVOA is adjusted for opponent. And so to go back to what I was saying, when you're talking about like average, yeah, if you're doing like even if you're EPA play, they were 12th. Like they'll definitely be above average because you don't have to be great in this division. And that's where, by the way, I want to make one more point about this team adding Judon, who, you know, even if he is 80% of the player he was 2 years ago, pre-injury, instantly walks in as the best pass rusher this team has had in years. It's within their own division. They go up against three quarterbacks who in Derek Carr, Baker Mayfield, and Bryce Young really struggle under pressure. And I think just even getting that pass rush a little bit closer, which was 32nd pass rush win, even a little bit closer to 20th or whatever, I think is going to have an outsized impact in this particular division. To your point, I think, though, whether or not they actually are average league-wide will come down to whether or not they can play coverage enough at a high level. Listen, I saw what Raheem Morris did with a group of players in Los Angeles who I feel like 99% of NFL fans can't name. So, you know, AJ Terrell, Jesse Bates, Justin Simmons, I think that they're going to be just fine.
I said Clark Phillips was my boy out of Utah, rookie. He was like a fourth round pick. He's like 5'9 on a good day. He's so good in coverage. He's just not big. I'm rooting for him. Corner two. I believe in the short king. Yeah. I'm very interested to see what they are schematically, because Raheem has been kind of a little bit of a chameleon over this late stage of his career, right? Like Raheem was originally a Monty Kiffin boy, Tampa two. And then, you know, time with Dan Quinn, cover three background, replaces Brandon Staley with the Rams. We're going to do the quarter stuff. I'm going to take your language. And so he's got him and Jimmy Lake, who's like a cover three, cover one guy, who's as the DC there. I imagine them with Bates and with Terrell, like, all right, we're going to be cover three, cover one. We're going to be plus one in the box is what I would do, but it's not guaranteed for sure.
You know who I really think could pop off in this defense, thinking about Raheem Morris, is Caden Ellis.
You're like a Caden Ellis fan. I remember you like being in on Caden Ellis.
I'm just saying the Rams don't win that Super Bowl unless Raheem Morris decides, my guy Ernest Jones, we're doing five-man rushes, and Caden Ellis is a very good pass rusher. You know, a little bit linebackers plays a little bit up and down, but I'm optimistic about it. I really am. I think the Falcons, by the way, win the division with a bullet now, but we'll see. All right, let's wrap with the flip side of that question. Which is more likely, and this is a way of getting to a quarterback that we haven't talked about. Which is more likely, the Broncos field an above or below average offense?
I think below still. Like,
sound confident about it.
I'm
taking above, by the way. I'll explain why. Yeah.
I think that Bo is going to be able to handle what's put in front of him, right? The most pleasant quarterback watching experience I had of the 2024 draft cycle was walking in with all my preconceived notions about Bo Nix from his time at Auburn, what I'd seen as a college football watcher, and then watching that final season in Oregon going, well, look at the young man. Like, this is maturation. This is like, he impressed me. Like, I was in November being like, oh my gosh, Bo Nix first round pick, how are we doing this? And then I watched the film and I was like, he's going to do exactly what an NFL offensive coordinator asks him to do. He largely plays within himself. Like, this is exactly the sort of thing that NFL coaches fall for. And then Sean Payton drafted him at 12 overall and was like, because he's the greatest. And I was like, yep, this is exactly what NFL offensive coaches tend to fall for. So I think the first two preseason games for Bo have been very positive. I think he's playing in rhythm. He's on time. He's distributing the ball quickly. He looks accurate. He understands the offense. He's moving in the pocket well. He's scrambling decisively. Like, I think there's been a lot of positives for Bo Nix. Now, the entire Green Bay Packers defense was sitting, so you would doggone hope the first team of the Broncos could move the football. So I think that there's preseason context to be considered. Like I said, in the preseason, it tends to support and buttress those quarterbacks who make really fast decisions and are willing to just take that profit, because you're just getting like cover three and you're packing the intermediate zones. So it is easy to just toss it to the check down and go. Like, teams are pretty quickly, when they play Denver, going to start pressing Cortland Sutton, going to start playing tight man coverage and asking Bo, hey, let's make some big boy throws. Because Bo is generally accurate. Sean Payton thinks that he's like extremely precise. I'm less convinced about that. You know, Bo's got a fine arm. Sean Payton thinks that he's got like an outstanding arm. He said that this week. And again, I'm less convinced of that. And so I think they're going to start to push the envelope on what Bo's capable of. He's going to have to make more peak plays, but he'll put what's in front of him and he'll handle it. The thing is, like, I think this line is fine. I think it's not what they paid for it to be. I like Cortland Sutton as a wide receiver one. I think 2, 3, 4, we got, you know, Troy Franklin and Marvin Mims and Josh Reynolds. We're trying to figure out what that rotation looks like. Tight end is a slopper. Tim Patrick, the boy. Listen, you can't say good things about Tim Patrick. That's what his ACL is here. You have, you know, you're Tim Patrick
Spector.
Yes. And so I like Sutton. I think the line is good. And I think that Bo will point guard this successfully. I think the ceiling is described by some of the ancillary weapons, and that's where I've got some questions.
I didn't say top 10 offense. I said
above average. Right. It's funny because like they're either going to be 17 or 15. It's just that's exactly above or below.
That's why I chose this. My bet in this is a bet on Sean Payton's ability to take the things that Bo Nix does well and wring every possible drop out of that. And I think we're seeing that early on. It's obviously preseason. Bo had a quote where he was like, yo, I know what you're about there. It's just cover three. And you know, man, right. I'm like, no more. It's going to get worse. It's going to get ugly. And to your point, I this is something I am not yet sure where the verticality in this offense comes from once defenses start squatting on stuff. And as you said, pressing some of these players and forcing Bo Nix to make more plays downfield. However, I think that the combination of the super quick release with what Payton is going to do schematically, and then on top of that, that little bit of playmaking, and by the way, his ability to throw on the run, which I actually think is probably his best attribute as a quarterback. I think the ball looks really good when he throws it on the run. Probably the best throw in the entire game was off of a naked. If I
would say the most like, Bo Nix that I've had has been the movement stuff, both talking the ball and getting around the corner and then also throwing on the run. Like everything has been a lot of like, oh, that's what I expected from Bo. The movement stuff has been a little bit like, okay, there you go, young man.
This kind of goes back to what we said about the Russ Justin stuff, which is as an NFL play caller, does your offense do something that you can build this out of? And I think that there's enough. Now, I think there is a ceiling on that. So I am not, I saw some pretty intense Bo Nix praise on the timeline after this, you know, early preseason. And I'm not there. I am not there. But I think that there is enough with him and that there is, I think, enough with, like, I think Payton is going to be like engaged this year. Like,
we gotta hope so.
And I think that there will be enough for this offense to be efficient, particularly when they're going up against defenses that can't challenge them the way that I think, you know, some of the top defenses in the NFL will. That'll make all the stuff we're describing a little bit harder to run. I guess I hate to keep going back to the Tua thing with him because, you know, they don't have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle on this roster, and that makes this feel a little bit moot. But like that has, I don't want to say it's like changed my opinion of like what kind of offense you can build with this type of quarterback. Because again, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Mike McDaniel, I think is a genius. But I do feel like the NFL now, especially with, you know, just some of the ways that offensive coordinators are incorporating motion and the way that they're borrowing things from the college game, is better suited to build an offense around a quarterback who's got like a super quick release, who's accurate from inside a clean pocket, and who can throw on the run. So I think that Payton can do enough with this offense to top that the bar we're discussing.
Yeah, there's a lot more ways to skin a cat with a young quarterback than there used to be. That's the number one thing that like...
The folksy way of saying what I just said. I like
you
that.
You got to be able to skin cats. It's a very important part of the idea.
What a weird saying, by the way. Who is the first person to be like, hey, you can skin a cat
that one,
a lot
and
of ways?
The one I always heard growing up was you throw a dead cat and you'll hit a blank, right? There's something that's around a lot, right? Like, you know, you've got a lot of...
That. I have never heard that expression.
You got a lot of, you know, like... Tesla Cybertrucks on the road, throw a dead cat, hit a Tesla Cybertruck. They're everywhere, right? That's, yeah. That very, a lot of dead cat thematic idioms, all right, in the Ben Solak lexicon. Now, Bo Nix. No, I think that there's so many more ways to make a young quarterback successful that for a really good offensive mind like Sean Payton, to see a guy in Bo Nix who's just going to hit the layups, right? He's going to do what is asked of him, point guard the offense. Absolutely. You're like, all right, like I can make it work with this guy. This is always where it's important to distinguish when we talk about quarterbacks pre-draft versus after they're drafted. Because when you're talking about Bo Nix, the first rounder, and you haven't selected him yet, I'm saying, listen, like, want a little bit more. Like, if you draft a guy in Bo Nix, you're kind of consigning yourself to a future where you really have to build around a guy, and you have to make sure he has elite weapons because he's only ever going to point guard the offense. And, like, if you're spending a top 10, top 15, top 20 pick on somebody, you don't want him to be that caliber of player. You want him to have a really high ceiling, a franchise-changing ceiling. So that's how you talk about Bo Nix before the draft. Now Bo Nix is a Denver Bronco. Okay, well, you're in the universe now. Are you equipped to do this? Because, hey, like, the Dolphins are out here setting scoring records with Tua Tagovailoa. Like, it can be done, especially on the rookie deal. So now you turn your eyes to the weapons, and now you turn your eyes to Sean Payton, and you say, okay, what's this going to look like on the field? I do think that the Tua comparison from a playstyle perspective is good, but Tua is just like, it has to be like 2020 Tua, and 2020, it has to be pre-McDaniel Tua, where it was like so much RPO, Eric Studesville, George Godsey offense, ton of quick game, and like you have to be perfect for 12, 13, 14 plays to actually get into the red zone, as opposed to we can have one play 75-yard drives with Mike McDaniel. That's not in the Broncos' bag.
I would say the key difference, there's a lot of differences between who they have and what the Broncos have from a skill player perspective, from certainly a passing attack perspective. And I think Tua also is just a better quarterback, honestly, certainly at this point in his career. However, I think the Broncos are going to be better at running the football than the Dolphins have been for like, you know,
and they like, years. That's another thing standing out.
The Dolphins are good now because the passing game is so good, and that's a whole thing. But when I go back to that offense and I think about what the Broncos did last year, like the Broncos were honestly pretty damn good running the ball last year, despite the fact that they had a absolutely inept passing attack for the most part. So you put in an offense, where defenses actually do have to respect the pass a little bit, as well as the escapability of the quarterback. I think they're doing some design quarterback run stuff. I think they're going to be able to run the ball. Let me look at last year. 13th running the ball in DVOA last year.
Yeah,
I think they're going to be as good this year.
Yeah, so, like I said, like they played a lot for that line, but it's still a good line. Like even if it's like maybe a little bit overpaid, and then like you bring up running game, the thing that also they did a lot with Russ that I think Bo's going to do a ton of is just running back targets. Right, they were an extremely heavy running back target team last year, both in the checkdown game and then also in the screen game. Bo Nix, very heavy target at or behind the line of scrimmage at Oregon. Right, the best way to build an offense around him is to.
Very heavy is an understatement, by the way. I feel like he must have broken a college football record for targets behind the line of scrimmage.
Yes. You want a horizontal stretch, right? Because if you are ever going to take deep shots with the guy in Bo Nix, it's going to be like in rhythm nine balls. And so you want those guys lined up outside of the numbers to begin with. So they did a lot of wide receiver screen stuff, but you saw a ton of running back screen in the first two preseason games, saw a ton of that last year. Jaleel McLaughlin is very good at that. Javonte Williams, good at that four and early down back. Samaje Perine is another like classic third down back. They have so many guys who catch the ball well out of the backfield.
Yeah.
They're going to be able to just like dink, dunk, distribute, run the football, and against bad defenses, like only ever see third and threes. And that's a really nice recipe for rookie quarterback.
If Sean Payton can call an above average offense with Teddy Taysom combination, he can do it with Bo Nix.
Here's the thing. You're just you're never allowed to get down by 13 points. Because if you do, then it's like, all right, we don't have the time to recover here.
Yeah, well, the defense is a whole other story. All right. That is it for now. I feel like I don't know who was going to come out of that feeling. Bears fans, I don't know. Ben, tell people about the work you've been doing on ESPN lately.
I'm on this show, which is always a blast and a fun time. So thank you for having me. I'm on ESPN Daily every week in season on Mondays with Clinton Yates. And so for your immediate post NFL Sunday podcast needs, please subscribe to ESPN Daily, old stomping grounds of media times. And then, I had a piece come out about Brandon Ayuk this past week. I've got a piece coming out ranking all 32 coaching staffs, which when I pitched it, I was like, this is a fun idea. And now I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get killed. This is the worst.
You sent me the list and I was like, I don't know. But it's so difficult because...
Listen, I have to decide which fan bases hold the worst grudges and then move their coaches up accordingly so as to keep myself at peace. That's the peek behind the curtain of the content game.
That's how we think. It is an interesting list, and I encourage people to check it out.
Oh, that was a very worrying interesting right there. I didn't like that interesting at all.
I enjoyed it. I will be back later this week to preview the final division the NFC North. And we will continue the two times a week cadence after that. All right, Lenny is, speaking of angry fan bases, Lenny is about to
I'm sorry, Lenny.
Because he hasn't eaten. But thank you, as always, Ben, for joining the show. You guys can check this out on YouTube, youtube.com/@MinaKimes. And I will see you on Thursday. Wow!